Chom den 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 jen jen ba da jom ba yang da ba zom be san je ru ba da shab so den ba de wa ra che jik den jen ba je bo du be ka lo jo wa la nam la da me nam je dom ba san je chom den de be ja wa sha ja do ba la jo do ja zo che o dom ba chom den de de je Dajomba Yandaba Dobe Sanje Riba Dajazo Demba Dewara Jigden Jemba Jebo Dewe Kalo Jova Lana Mebal Hada Chumden De Bejawa Shaja Dova La Chazelo Chodo Jamso Chewa Chumden De Deje Jewa Dajomba Yandaba Dobe Sanje Demba devara jeba jeden jemba jebo deve kalo jova lana Lada menam je demba sanje jumden de bejava shaja tuva la chaze lo chedo jamso cheo Gombo jezen jambe yang la chaze lo Kange lodre temnye tende nyenda namda rabze Chinyi tungun chishin seche nyege toga lewan Ganda sive zara mare meldomo tonye geze Dozo gula poje daze yala tuju yanden song Chodara che dro nyomo nyi long lege cha dro treze che Mari menze do nye nyogo che nye chunze red Tene da je sa ju ta zun yende lun zo ya se towe Chuda chuda chunyi gende dalu meze jambe yang la du Arabadzana de omo Arabadzana Omo Arabadzana de
Omo Arabadzana de
Je jara veze je dalu temo memba ramze Kadan denju junglo doba ye lodu bobe Tse do zo Joje me do jama rira linje nyende genba de Sanje shingdo mide bewa ye Drogwen namda jen che baray shoy Tamba ke namange chugu kala kenze tendene Che dara zambe duja zemala Savje chuge cha abdo se Yedan goro rana mendala gana Tayame Soji chonamala Chanchu padu tani gyasoji Tagi chuji jibi sonamangi Drola penji sanji drubarasho Chuda soji chonamala Chanchu padu tani gyasoji Tagi chuji jibi sonamangi Drola penji sanji drubarasho Soji chonamala chanchu badu tani kyabzu chi Tagi chushi jibe sonamangi Drola arvenji Cho Lada lame medami anji ombu dan Jajin lazo chuchi chola chawa chiba Namo sanje sumba rabdo shishin tewe gyujoba Deda je je dambe chunyin je ne de je je namo la ye je dan lu dan ne je je drupon dan dame ye je nam dan drowa gwen je chan nam je zam tam je je lu da ge je dun dos.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is it very cold outside?
Getting colder.
Getting colder. Huh? So you are the diehards. You brave that.
We're the live hearts.
Okay, so let's begin the ritual. Anybody want to share whether you have any chance of applying anything that we discuss for the past many weeks now? Any opportunity arises?
I've started the bodhicitta is what really got me fully in to the Buddhist path.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was for a bit there, I asked someone from the Pali tradition, why would I want to reach enlightenment? And the person who was a monk said, why not? And left it at that. And so it wasn't until I saw that, as a therapist, I really fall short. I can't help everybody. And I began to realize that as I get rid of some of the gross obscuration negativities and kept on going, I'll be able to help more people. And so that's kind of, that's an old thing. And I got back in touch with that as I was reviewing Geshe Aten, his teaching way back when, 10 years ago, on bodhicitta. And also I was reading Lama Sopa's version of the Lamrim on bodhicitta. That's something that really I would never articulate it because I would feel bad about saying this, but he said it and it just hit it on the nail. And he talked about, it wasn't the part about bodhicitta in the middle, and he talks about the path of the bodhisattva is really difficult. And he said one of the reasons is that people are not only sentient beings are not only so numerous, but they behave so badly. And they can be rude, and they can be this, and they can be that. And this is something that I had thought and experienced, and that I found discouraging at times. And so, so it was just, seeing that it wasn't, something... I was doing something wrong for thinking that or feeling that. It was like, I remember like 2 years ago, I was even crying about this, oh my gosh, it's like, just, I'm being so nice, and this is what I get and that sort of thing. So it was good review, and I've decided to dedicate one of those, journals to really hone in on that a little bit more. So, that was very, very helpful to spark my interest again. Not that it goes away, but it's like we have to really go deeper, so that's what it is.
Thank you. That's it. We hear all the time, isn't it? A new lama comes, there's a talk there, teaching there, we go there, it's so wonderful. And then we go back, and then that's it, we forget that. And then we go attend another session, and then, I heard about this before. But still go back at that. Yeah, so that's all, yeah. Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier, many times we said, I have no time. That is our excuse. But actually, whether you have time or not is about prioritizing. which one you prioritize at the top, then we will definitely make time. Sometimes, oh, I'm not free, you know, because at I don't know, at 8 o'clock this my show comes on. You see, that's the important thing. Yeah. So it's good that, you know, bodhicitta is not, I mean, something we can cultivate within, you know, a week or month or even 1 year. It takes time. It is not easy. And especially when we are so habituated in cherishing ourselves rather than cherishing others. So it is very difficult. But it doesn't mean that it is not possible. It is possible. We have to start somewhere. Even just making prayer is a start. We have a saying, isn't it? What was that? A journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. So even coming to class and making this kind of determination that, okay, I will really try to have some experiential understanding of what bodhicitta is. We already have intellectual understanding. If we are asked to talk about what is bodhicitta and all this, yeah, we can talk. But if we are asked to, in my case, if I'm asked to talk from my own experience, I wouldn't have even one word to talk about. So that's because we don't practice. So it is good day, you know. Always make a dedication to be able to practice. And then, yeah, it will go somewhere else. If there is no intention at all, then you will never get there. Anyone?
Yeah, I guess practice has to be ceaseless. When I look at my own mind and developing bodhicitta and a correct understanding of how the world is, my mind is so habituated that it just overwhelms everything else, always. If I don't constantly practice, then there's nothing there. The only thing that can possibly make any change is if I keep practicing, which of course I constantly forget to do. The more I practice and the more I sit and the more I learn, the more I realize just how ceaseless my worldly thoughts are. They just do not go, they don't go away. You have to make friends. I think not just me, we all have to make friends with that. Recognize it and keep turning back to practice. In my case, the difficult thing is I want to beat myself up for it. I just want to beat myself up, stop that. But it doesn't work. It's a constant reminder.
Yeah. Slowly and steady wins the race. Yeah. But just having this acknowledgement, this recognition itself is a great step already. How many people realize that? Most of the people, they don't realize that. They don't even realize that, you know, all that afflictive emotions is the source of our problem. They think that it is good to have anger so that I can stand against somebody. But that's not the case. They have this misconception, you know, anger is good. Yeah, I have come across people who really say that, oh, anger is good, you need to have violence. Without that, you know, world won't be, you know, fun at all. Yeah. Anyway, I think that, you know, it is, we all have this intention to really practice, but then we don't get to do it. We fail in doing that. We are unsuccessful. I think one reason is because we lack mindfulness. We always forget. So just to share with you, So remember I was saying that New Year you have to make, it is good to make a resolution. So this year I made the resolution to really practice mindfulness. That was my resolution. But there were many times, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. This happens. But I hope when we were when we are celebrating New Year next year, I can look back and say, okay, I have at least achieved something. But we don't know. I don't know. It's just my hope. So likewise, if you kind of make this, remember we looked at the goal setting. It has to be very specific. If you just simply say in an abstract way, that, oh, I will try, I will practice as much as I can. That's really abstract. Instead, if you say, that, oh, I'll try to work on mindfulness. I'll try to work on this and this and that. And then you give a specific time. Then yeah, you can see whether you know you are whether you are able to fulfill that goal. So just sharing. Maybe it can inspire you to do something else, something more.
Well, that's where the perseverance is. It's not just hope; it's the perseverance. The next step, you know, after bodhicitta is one of the six.
Yeah.
Perseverance is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we will be discussing this later, but perseverance is not, you know, really putting effort and stubbornly, you know, pushing that. It is finding joy in doing that. If you don't find joy in whatever you are doing, then yeah, nothing. You won't be able to achieve anything. So in order to find joy, you have to see the benefit. See the advantage of doing that. Like in my case, if I contemplate on the benefit of being mindful, then I will see that, oh, there is benefit, there is advantage. And on the other hand, if I contemplate on the flaws, on the faults, disadvantages of being absent-minded, then it will propel me, it will motivate me to do more. So then, yeah, I will be happy to do it. If I find it happy in doing that, then yeah, there is more likelihood that I will continue, I will persist. Anyone? One, two, okay.
I feel sometimes that the dissatisfaction that we all experience is something to overcome or to be motivated to do, to get beyond that. But when you realize that the dissatisfaction has no end, even though you temporarily achieve joy, then the dissatisfaction returns again. And just knowing that it can't be found, it can't truly be like permanently, and that there is no self, and yet there's a relative designation of the self. You know, it's a challenge, because there's times when it seems like the times when the mind is in equanimity with it, and then there's other times when it's in discriminating awareness with it. So making distinctions. So I think there's almost like you have to some kind of transcend it, you know, you have to get beyond its dualness, the unsatisfactoriness and the satisfactoriness, that both natures are the same, and yet they just have this ongoing play, and it's something to get free from, you know, to get to go beyond or something.
That's the whole point, isn't it? Our practice is go beyond all that. Our the reason for purpose of our it is to completely eradicate dissatisfaction. And we know that from the Four Noble Truths teaching, that dissatisfaction is the second form of suffering. the suffering of change. There is the discontentment. So if you practice, there is a way to completely eradicate that. If there is no way to remove that completely, what are we doing here then? There's no liberation, there's no nirvana, there's no Buddhahood, there's no enlightenment. And this we already talked in the 12 links. It all gives rise, it all originates from ignorance. If we really have understanding or insight into the emptiness of the reality of how reality of self, how self exists in real, in reality, then we will be able to reduce that grasping. If we are able to reduce that grasping, automatically dissatisfaction will be reduced. So sometimes we have this intellectual understanding, but we don't really practice there. So then you say, oh, I know this, but nothing is happening. It's just here. Having understanding here won't really make any changes. Remember I told you the story. I think it was the first time. So there was this gathering during Buddha's time. So there's so Buddha gives sermon all the time. And then during Buddha's time, when Buddha gives a sermon or teaching, and thousands of people reach different degree of realizations. And then there was this group of people who has been coming every time, but they don't get any realization, they don't achieve any realizations. But they see that others are. So they approach Buddha and said, how come? I have been coming here every sermon and I don't get I don't achieve any realization. Whereas I see that this and that, all this have already achieved this and that. So Buddha, being very skillful, he asked the person, said that, where do you live? So he said, oh, he lives in this area. And have you been living here all your life, or have you moved from somewhere else? The person said, oh, yeah. I used to live in another bigger city, and I moved here now, and I'm living here. So what do you do for living when you were in, what were you doing when you were in that city? He said, oh, I am a trader. I sell things and all this. So that means you must have been frequently traveling to this your old place. Oh, he said, yes, I've been traveling. Oh, he said, but you know the way there. He said, oh, yeah, I know the ways. Those days, yeah, you have to walk. I know the road, you know, the road or the path so well that even if you blindfolded me, I can get there. Oh, I see, that means maybe those people who wanted to also go there, maybe coming to see you for consultation, to ask how to get there. You say, yeah, many people come there and come to ask for directions, and I give them. So Buddha said, do all of them get there, get to that town? He says, no, he says that those who come here and those who actually go there, walk there, gets there, but many don't go there, and they don't get there. And then Buddha said, exactly. Who have come for your instructions, and you give them instructions as clearly as possible. But if they don't start or embark on the journey, they will never get there. I can find out how to get to, you know, or wherever, some other places. But if I never start on the journey, I will never get there. So Buddha's main message is that yes, I noticed that you have been coming here every day, every teaching. But if you don't practice, then he said, no way you can achieve any realization. Realization is contingent on your practice, not listening and having this intellectual understanding. So this is to stress that practice is so important. So sometimes when if we only have intellectual understanding, that's quite dangerous. Remember, we have a saying that little knowledge is dangerous. So you see that, oh, this says this one, oh, this says this one. Oh, how come? I don't feel it. Or maybe that's not right, that's not right, that's not true. There is danger. So it's always, you know, try from something simple. No need to aim for something great and all that. Just try simple things. From there you build on. Sometimes we have this tendency to chase after big names. Many people, if you say, oh, I'm going to give Mahamudra teaching, wow, all wants to come. But the basic bodhicitta understanding, many people don't have. So without that basic foundation understanding, how can you practice Mahamudra and all that? How can you practice all this tantric practice? So there is this somehow misconception that, oh, must get this, you know, high, this teaching, that teaching. If it is something unique, something that is not common, then, you know, oh, I must get it. I must attend it. But if it's something simple like Lamrim, oh, I've heard that many times. I don't need to go. That's completely wrong. Lamrim is the base. Lamrim is the foundation. Without that, no way. No way. We have discussed before when it talks about the bodhicitta being the entrance, being the gateway of Mahayana. Without that, no way. How many initiations you receive? How many retreats you did? No way. You will get nowhere. So there was this story. A whole life retreater. He has done this, the 3-year retreat so many times. And he died and he was born as those spirits. And he started to disturb people and started to possess people. And there was this person who has been possessed by this spirit. And he was brought to many lamas, Rikuten, and then finally he was brought to one lama. So the lama, first of course, the usual way, tried to do a yamantaka, generated, did the self-generation of yamantaka, and then started to dispel the spirit. It's like the, in Christianity, what is called that?
Exorcism.
Exorcism, kind of. And he laughed, you are now generating into Yamantaka. I have done that so many times. And then Lama thought, okay, I better do into higher giver. So Lama kind of self-generate into higher giver. And then he said that, you are now trying to be higher giver. I said, there will no effect on me. Then Lama realized, felt so sad, this poor fellow. He has done all this retreat. Obviously, he has done Yamantaka retreat. That's why he could tell. And he has done higher giver retreat. He has done so many of these highest yoga tantra deities retreat. But then he is born like this. So Lama felt so much compassion towards that. And then Lama, when he felt that compassion, then he said that, because he has some realization, because he has done all that. So he said, that's what I lack, he said. That's what I lack. Compassion is what I lack. I didn't do. You are good. Okay, I will leave now. Yeah, since then, no disturbances. So this shows, just doing retreat, just doing recitation, millions and millions of, you know, highest yoga tantra deities, Malaka mantra, is not going to ascertain good rebirth. Forget about enlightenment and nirvana. It cannot even guarantee you a, what do you call, escape from the three lower realms. So my point is, you know, when you hear about these common teachings like bodhicitta and all this, don't say that it's, you know, it's not important. And we always, yeah, the unique ones, the rare ones, go for that. That's not right. That's not the attitude. Once you have all that basic one, then you can build on it. Then you can go and receive, and all that can complement. Otherwise, no. So that's a kind of a long side talk, isn't it? Sorry, I must say that. I must say that. I tell people that I'm quite straightforward. I don't like to sugarcoat. Whatever is the case, I am direct. I can say nice things. Oh, that's great, wonderful. You are such a great practitioner. How much help that can be to you? And you will remain in that delusion. You will remain in that misconception that you know so much and that is what I say is correct. No point. It will not help you at all. You are simply fueled with just what you call ignorance. So now you know that. I will say directly. I hope you don't mind. Okay, now back to the today's topic. This was supposed to complete it by last week, but this is quite a big topic, so I'm continuing with that. So last week we talked about what is bodhicitta. We talked about the features of bodhicitta. What does it mean? The definition of bodhicitta. And then we spent quite some time whether it is possible to develop. Otherwise, no point. If it is not something, you know, attainable, something feasible, then yeah, no point. But then we kind of establish that it is possible to generate bodhicitta. Through practice, it is possible. And there is this scientific support as well, that this brain plasticity kind of corroborates that through practice you can change the structure of brain. And if you are inclined, if you were used to incline towards hurting people and being selfish and all that, but through practice you can change your brain structure to be more oriented towards others' welfare. So this already kind of scientifically established. So if that is the case, then we can kind of conclude that, yes, it is possible from the scientific, with the scientific support or evidence. So today, now the question is, so if it is possible, how can we develop? What are the methods? So that's what we are going to discuss. So how to develop bodhicitta? So there are two main methods to develop compassion. So the one is what is called, or what is known as, the sevenfold cause and effect. So you have these six causes and then seven, the result. So in total there are sevenfold, seven things that, you know, through developing one after another, one can develop compassion. So we will discuss that in detail later. And then the other method is the training based on equalizing and exchanging self and others. So first we have to equalize ourselves with others. This equalize doesn't mean that, you know, we are at same level in status or whatever, race or whatever. But here we are talking about we are equal in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. Once you have established that, then comes the exchanging yourself with others. This is other, I think it's. So this is, there are two kind of practices or training descended from different lineages. So one, the first one is from Adisha, and then the other one is mainly from the Shantideva's text. So now, what are the sevenfold cause and effect? So first we have this cultivating a recognition that all beings are one's mother. In Tibetan we call it Mashi. And then cultivating a remembrance of their kindness. Once you have developed this understanding that, or insight, or there's understanding that all sentient beings have been one's mother at a time, at one time, then it automatically, that leads to the remembrance of their kindness. So when they were our mother, the way this life's mother treated us kindly, they had already done so. So that's how we recollect their kindness. And then once we have done that, and then the cultivating the wish to repay their kindness, and then we cultivate love. And then after that, compassion arises. And then this, what I call this special resolve, which is that I will liberate them. I will bring them to enlightenment, that kind of resolve. And then, yeah, that results into the actual cultivation of bodhicitta. So I have here a chart. So in order to become Buddha, you need to cultivate bodhicitta. So there are two methods, sevenfold cause and effect, and then equalizing and exchanging oneself and other. And then this one. Under this one, I put 1, 2, 3. So there are 6 causes, yeah? The 6 causes itself, some are causes and some are result. So when we cultivate compassion, in the cultivation of compassion training, the main goal is to develop this sense of endearment. Many translations, they translate it as affectionate love. So this love is not just general love. It is the kind of love that a mother would have for his or for her only son. That kind of love, it is different. If a mother has only one son, one child, mother's love for that child would be really strong, and that son will appear to the mother so dear. Mother cannot tolerate anything, any suffering happening to that son. So that kind of loving affection is the goal here. Because once you have that for all sentient beings, then it is easy. When you perceive their suffering, automatically you have this strong wish to alleviate their suffering. There is compassion. And then with that compassion, then you will have this special resolve that I will help them. I will liberate them from their suffering. I will save them from their suffering. And that leads to bodhicitta. So you can see that the first three are the causes of this compassion, this sense of endearment. So you can imagine, at the moment, when something bad or some, let's say, if your family members, if your children, if they are in pain, what would be our reaction? We feel so strongly about that, and we really want to do everything that we can to alleviate that pain and suffering. We would want that children, your children, to be happy and free of suffering. So we have that for certain group of people. Only the inner circle. You have that towards your family members, and then maybe some relatives. But beyond that, we had difficulty to generate that kind of concern and care and love and affection. That is our tendency. Because those who are not in that circle, we consider as outsiders. They are beyond our inner circle. So that kind of compassion or that kind of loving affection, yeah, we are born with it. It is kind of biological. When we are born, we have that one. But here, we are trying to extend that. We are trying to extend this sense of endearment beyond that inner circle and extend to other people. People who are stranger to you, people who are even enemy to you, who you have difficulties. So once you are able to do that, then yeah, it is easy. So both of these are trying to cultivate that. They are using different methods to achieve that same goal. So in the first one, so you start, I think if we talk from the reverse way, so when you have this bodhicitta, I mean, when you have this special attitude that I will, so that only arises when you see other people's suffering. When you see other people suffering, only then you will have this wish to remove their suffering, to alleviate their suffering. So that will only arise if you have that kind of sense of endearment towards that person. So in order to have that, you need to have this sense of repaying their kindness. And that will only come when you have really contemplated on others' kindness. And that we are doing through this recognizing others as your mother. So from the Buddhist point of view, from this, especially this method, is saying that we have taken so many lives. This is not our first life. We have circled in this existence numerous times, countless times. So if that is the case, so if there is no guarantee that after this life I will be born to my same parents, my earlier parents. We don't know where my parents were born. Especially my mother. I lost my mother at the age of, I think, 4 or 5 months old. So if my mother has already achieved a human rebirth, she would be like how many years old now? Very already in her 40s. 40, almost 50. I'm old. So no way that if I die, I will be born as her son. And also there's no guarantee, or we don't know that my mother is born as mother. Maybe my mother has achieved a monk's life. Maybe she is now a monk. Monks cannot give birth, isn't it? So no way that she will be my mother. So if you think that way, so it is possible that, you know, we will be, what do you call, our mothers and fathers have been changing. So because of this, since the number of times that we have taken so many times, so it is possible that, you know, everybody has been my mother. You all sitting down here. You have one time, you know, you have been my mother. You have been my father. You have been my uncle, aunt, all that. So that's how we analyze. And then once you have this conviction that, yes, all sentient beings have been my mother at one time. Yes?
I just have a question. Is there like a way to sense if you've kind of met with the person that's been reincarnated that you might have known before?
Oh, sorry, could you repeat that?
Is there like a way you can sense that you've met with someone that's been
Of course, in many cases of Rinpoche, they have recollections. They remember, you know, their past life. Remember the method of even identifying. They will present to you two sets of items, one belonging to your predecessor, and other, of course, belong to somebody else. And you are required to choose that belong to you. So in many cases, they select or they choose the item that was rightfully belonged to his predecessor. So in the Dalai Lama's case, there's this story that he was offered that walking stick, two sets. And first, His Holiness took the other one and pondered over it. And then he left it aside and then chose the correct one. And later they found that actually that walking stick also belonged to His Holiness at one time. His Holiness gave it to another Lama. So these are kind of, you know, anecdotal evidence to show that you can remember. Mm. So where was I now?
We have all been your relatives.
Yes. Yeah. So this concept about everybody. So when you really think about it, it is possible. It is possible. So once you get that conviction, then you will say, oh, then you started to recollect their kindness. Of course, at the moment, you don't know what the other people, and even the other people, you feel that they are causing you harm. But when you look at your own mother in this lifetime, so here in Tibetan or in Buddhism, they talk about mother. But you can use anyone, whoever is, you know, very kind to you. You can use your father, you can use your uncle, grandma, grandfather. It doesn't really matter because people have different experiences. Normally, the Tibetan and all that, yeah, we have normally a good experience with our mother. So it is easier for us to do that. But if you find it other means, please, you can do that. So this is to so when you recollect what your mother of this life has done to you, how kind they have been, then you say, since this mother has done, been very kind to me in this and that way, then all those sentient beings who were my mother at that time, they would have done the same kind of kindness to me. So that's how you kind of extend that gratitude towards all sentient beings. And then with that, once you have cultivated that appreciation and gratitude, so you want to return the favor, you want to repay. So there are many ways to pay. Of course, you can pay them, repay them in a materialistic way. One way is that you can just, you know, give them $5 million each. First of all, that's not possible. If you give $5 million to a dog, they cannot do anything with that. Even to human beings, it's not possible. Even it is possible, let's say, even it were possible, how much can it help? The maximum help is all in this life. It cannot guarantee other sentient beings from falling into lower realms, forget about, you know, the nirvana and all that. So the best way of repaying other sentient beings is to bring them to liberation, to free them from this existence. So that is the way you want to repay. So because of that, and then you see, I need to. First, you have to see, once you have already cultivated that kindness and then this willingness to repay all this, you will be able to generate this sense of closeness and this sense of endearment. With that, whenever you see any sentient beings, you, when they see you, when you perceive them, or when you see them in suffering, when you see them suffering, yeah, automatically your compassion, it becomes a spontaneous thing. And then you want to do something about it. So that's where I want to. I am the son. If I don't help my mother, who else would do that? That kind of, you know, the responsibility, sense of responsibility. And that's when you say that, okay, I want to help them, and I have the responsibility, I want to take one, but at the moment, I cannot do. And you then, when you look and investigate who has the ability, who has the capability to do so, you realize that Buddha has. And then you want to become Buddha so that you can liberate all those sentient beings. So that is the gist of this sevenfold cause and effect. But before we do that, in real practice, I think we will stop here and have tea first, and then we will continue. Actually, I've already covered all from just looking at this. So we can end the class here. Yeah. Yeah, so before we start on this method or this start training our minds into cultivating compassion, first we need to achieve impartiality, or what is called equanimity. So this is like leveling the field. So if you want to plant something, so I know a bit of how farm works, because I grew up in farm. My parents were farmers, so there's a lot of work. Of course, we don't have this kind of tool, so everything is manual. First we have to dig all that soil out, and then I think you have to do 3 or 4 rounds, and then finally they will look for these weeds, dry weeds. If you leave it in there, it will destroy. So this is like leveling, and then of course stone or whatever there is, you have to filter all that, and you have to make a fertile kind of level any irregularities. So I just put this image to show that, you know, at the moment, we are very biased. We have this close, we have, our tendency is to ignore those who are, let me rephrase. So when it comes to our people in our inner circle, we have this affectionate love, care, concern. But then when it comes to strangers, we are kind of indifference, we show indifference. We don't really care what happens to that person. And then, of course, when it comes to our people that we had difficulty with, we are more than happy if bad things happen to them, isn't it? You're shaking your head. Yeah, we say, okay, good, this happened to him, you know.
Can you have that in a sense that you're not really like enjoying that they're suffering, but that you just are laughing at the karmic ordeal that they've entangled them themselves. I don't know. Sometimes I find humor to be enlightening in some sense.
Yeah.
And I look at it sometimes and I find it funny. I mean, just laughable.
Hmm.
You know, sometimes. And not because I personally want them to suffer, but I just find the absurdity, I guess, of their consequences that they've.
Hmm.
Instead
yeah.
of having maybe the compassion is coming out in sort of humor rather than.
So these responses depends on individual differences. So your differences, you know, I mean, your response is that when you see somebody whom you had difficulty with, you laugh, you see humor in that, and you think about karma and all that. But how many people understand about karma and all this? So I'm just talking generally. Some people, you know, when they see that, they feel compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Poor fellow, you know, compassion. And some more than that, they really want to help, even though they are, you know, viewed as an enemy, but they want to go and offer help. But some people, yeah, they rejoice. So it's all individual differences. So as a Mahayana practitioner, as a Bodhicitta practitioner, we are supposed not to even laugh at them. We are supposed to, you know, generate compassion even more. Because now that they are really suffering, that is the reason to feel compassion towards that person. So we are perceiving their suffering. Yeah, so I'm just talking about general. Generally, we have these categories. This is my friends and relatives and loved ones. These are my enemies and these are strangers. So based on our category, we have different emotional responses. Or yeah, based on our response, we have different varying responses according to the category. So generally, our tendency is to have love and affection all towards people who are in that inner circle. And then we have indifference to strangers, and then we have a kind of a rejoice or, you know, don't really like or kind of response towards our enemies. So if we have that kind of attitude, then there is no way we will be able to generate bodhicitta, because in order to generate bodhicitta, you need to cultivate compassion. Compassion is not just for, you know, selected people. Compassion is for all sentient beings, whether they are your friends or enemies or strangers. So the measurement of attaining compassion is whenever you see anybody, if you are able to, if that wish to alleviate suffering spontaneously arises upon seeing other people, no matter who that person is, that is kind of a measurement that you have achieved, compassion. So at the moment, like me, no. If I view my family members, I may be able to generate some degree of compassion. But when it comes to stranger, no. And then it comes to enemy, no. So that is not. So this shows that I have not developed compassion. I have not generated or cultivated compassion. So we need to generate this equanimity. So equanimity, there are different types of equanimity. One is what is called, it is based on feelings. So you don't feel at all. The neutral feeling. So some stimuli it engenders pleasant or unhappy, unpleasant, and then some you have no feeling at all. So that kind of is all kind of feeling is also, you can say, equanimity. But what we are talking here is not that kind of feeling. Oh, I don't have it here. Maybe later it will appear. So there are two ways to develop this impartiality. So the first one is sentient beings are equal from their sides. So one reason we can use to cultivate this is that, you know, from the sentient beings' sides, they are same like us. There is no reason to discriminate, because like us, just like us, they also want happiness. Just like us, they also don't want to experience unhappiness. And what they are doing is as same as what we are doing. They are striving for happiness, but like us, they end up suffering. So when you think that way, that is to help you to kind of reduce that discrimination. And another reason is, there is no reason to discriminate from our side. So one reason is from their side. Another reason is from our side. From our side is because all sentient beings have been our mother at one time. So why should I discriminate one person? It's just because that the person is not our parents in this life. That is not rational. But when they were our parents or mothers or our loved ones, they have been kind as this life's kind people or this life's parents. So there are two reasons to contemplate. So one is that from their side, we should not, because they are similar to us, that wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And from our side, we cannot really discriminate, because they are all same. They have been our sentient mothers, and they have been, no, they are our mothers, and then they have been kind to us. So when you reflect on this, this is not to eliminate the categories of enemies or friends or strangers. So normal practice is, you first visualize, or you just bring to your mind, first, friends. Yeah, first you bring friends to your mind, and then you observe what is your reaction. What is your reaction towards them? You will realize that you have this attachment towards them, because when you think about it, why you have this attachment? Because this person did this and this, they have been kind to me and all this. And then when you think, bring to your mind a stranger, and you will observe that, you will notice that you have this indifference towards that person, those people who are stranger, because to you, like, they didn't do anything for me. And then, yeah, when you bring to your mind enemy, there is this strong kind of a hatred or animosity towards them. So that is because your reason is that, oh, that person has done some harm in the past, they're doing it now, and they will do in the future, that kind of reasoning. So we create these categories based on our perception. And in actual reality, that is not the case, because there is nothing really absolute in terms of friends or enemies or strangers. So you may think at the moment, you may think somebody as your friend, and you are so attached to that. But very next moment, maybe this evening, by this evening, that can become the arch enemy turn. So there is no certainty that, you know, that category or that label will remain all the time. It fluctuates all the time. A person who is completely stranger to you, it may turn out to be your best friend in the future. Likewise, your enemy, whom you call enemy. Look at, I think best example is the American politics. Michael Cohen and Trump, the best buddies. Now they are the worst enemies. Kim Jong-un and Trump, they are boasting, competing about whose button is bigger. Remember, I have the biggest button and something. Now they are like, oh, chairman, what was that? Chairman, does he call him the chairman? Yeah, Chairman Kim Jong-un or something. Earlier it was something else. You see?
Little rocket man.
Yeah, rocket man. Little rocket man. Now he's the chairman, Mr. Chairman. imagine. And we can relate that in our own life. How many people have been your friends? How many people have been your enemies? And we have so many stories of, oh, that person betrayed me. Betrayed, that term itself shows that this change is possible. So why we stick to that category? Why we stick to that level, a label? So this is all about that. So when we do this meditation, it is not to eliminate the categories of enemy, friends, or stranger. These categories remain. But here what we are trying to do is to reduce our responses based on those labels, to reduce the discriminatory attitude based on the labels that we have created. We created those labels. So here when we talk about equanimity, it is about reducing that kind of discrimination towards all these different people based on these labels, these categories. So in short, it is to cultivate insight or ability to come to see each other without the partiality of hating some and being attached to others. That's the main goal here. So now, developing affectionate love or sense of endearment for sentient beings. We have already talked about this, but just since it is in the slide. So there are three causes. So cultivate the first, second, third I've shown in the chart there, in the graph. So first one, of course, is the cultivating a recognition that all beings are one's mother at one time. So we have already talked about that. And once you have developed that, and then this arises, cultivating a remembrance of their kindness, then we try to remember the kindness. So this is very relevant to bring in the Nikon. Remember the Nikon that we discussed, the Japanese introspection that we discussed during one time? To remember, to reflect, recollect your mother's, what things that, there are three questions. What have I received? What have I returned? And what trouble have I caused? So these three, when you do that, then you will be able to really appreciate your mother's. So this is not just mother. You can do on any person, anybody. Your mother. Start. Normally the practice is you start with your mother. Because the assumption is that you always have a good relationship with your mother. So that is the assumption. But that may not be true to everybody. So yeah, you start with your mother and then you can continue with father, brother, sister, your grandfather, grandmother. Yeah. So this is to generate remembrance, generate gratitude. And then cultivating the wish to repay one's mother's kindness. Once you have recollected, once you remember the kindness of others, then you would want to repay one's mother, and we have already discussed that, the way to remember. So there is one, I don't know what this is, let's see. Is the volume up? Okay. So this is just to show that you know how, as a parent, I think if you are already parents, of course you know, if you are a mother, you know, you already know this, you know, what you would do for your child, for your son or daughter. So this actually just, of course it's fictional, but this kind of conveys the message that mothers would do all this for us. So maybe this will be a good reminder. Sometimes what happens is, you know, I think we discussed this in Nikon as well. Sometimes we are just stuck with one event that your parents did, which is not to your liking, or which is beyond, not to your expectation. and then you got stuck there and you completely erase the other things, so many other things that your mother or father or whoever has done for you. Sometimes there is a likelihood. It is possible, you know. You just, there's one thing that you didn't like, and then that actually kind of overwhelms or overshadows the rest of the kindness. So this is to show that, you know, how mothers think about, you know, they're all the time trying to do or provide the best to your or to your child.
แล้วเรียกกันหมดแล้วไหนล่ะได้สักประมาณเนี่ยเดี๋ยวว่าจะไปดูตอนเด็กๆอ่ะนัดเขาสนนัดดูเลยดูสิเผื่อแป๊บเดียวตอนนี้ก็ยังสนอยู่นะคะแม่เอาไปไว้กินในรถเดี๋ยวจะหิวโอ้แม่เอาแม่กินเลยแม่แม่
จะได้หน้าติดหน้าติดคอตอนเด็กๆอ่ะเคยโดนไม่ได้หน้าติดคอเหรอใครบอก
ชอบกินหาง
That kind of summarizes, isn't it, what parents would do. They will tell lies, they will always observe what you like, what you dislike, all this. So I was browsing these clips, and after I finished 5 or 6, I was already in tears. That was funny. Are you up for another one?
Daddy is the sweetest daddy in the world. Daddy is the most handsome. The smartest. The most clever. The kindest. My Superman. Daddy wants me to do well at school. Daddy is just great, but he lies. About having a job. He lies about having money. He lies that he's not tired. He lies that he is not hungry. He lies that we have everything. He lies about his happiness. He lies because of me.
So our parents make a lot of sacrifices, and they put a bold face, even though they are really inside, you know, broken down.
But it also shows that the children, this little girl, she loves them, you know, so it's a two-way street.
Yeah, she, of course, she observed that, but how many child at that age? Of course, they make them, it's a fictional movie, but many things are true. Parents will do anything for their child, whatever, you know, sacrifices. Yeah, so this will help you to recollect the kindness. Then we can, you know, extend that to others as well. They would have done the same when they were our mother. So this is how to cultivate the sense of this endearment, their loving affection. So with that, we will be able to generate compassion. So the compassion, of course, is the root of Mahayana path. Without this, without compassion, no Mahayana practices, no Mahayana path. We talked about bodhicitta, bodhicitta being the entrance to Mahayana, Mahayana and Mahayana path. So bodhicitta is contingent on compassion. Without compassion, there is no bodhicitta. So that's why it's the root of Mahayana path. And then in Lamrim, and especially in many of the texts, compassion is extolled for three reasons. It is important in the beginning, in the middle, at the end. So normally the analogy is the harvest, so that's why I have the picture here. So in order for a harvest, there are three important things that are necessary. The first, at the beginning, what is important is you need seed. Seed is important. And then in the middle, the all that condition, like water, sun, the rain, whatever, those are important in the middle. And then finally, the result itself, the harvest itself. If you all do that, and then finally it does not produce any harvest, then yeah, it is no point. So at the end, the harvest is important. Likewise, compassion is important in the beginning, in the middle, at the end. So because of compassion, then you kind of enter into the Mahayana practice. And that's when you started to embark on the journey to enlightenment. So without compassion, there is no way you can even think of that. So in order to get to Buddhahood, you need to have compassion at the beginning. And then in the middle, if you have no compassion, then even if you try to get, enter the, let's say with one compassion, and then, you know, you enter the Mahayana path, but if you don't have compassion all the time, then you will be discouraged. You will feel that, oh, no point when you look at the people, you know, how they behave. Oh, how am I going to, you know, relieve these people from their suffering? So you get discouraged, and you may fall into Pali tradition path. So it is important, compassion, it is important in the middle as well when you are in your practice, when you are training. You need to have this compassion all the time to push you forward, to give you encouragement. And then at the end, if you don't have compassion, then whatever knowledge you have gained, you will not use it. You will not help other sentient beings. At the moment, Buddhas are helping because they have compassion. Because of compassion, yeah, they have no choice. Kind of, you know, they are compelled to help sentient beings. That is all because of compassion. So in that sense, compassion is important in all these three stages. And then we have already talked about the special attitude. So this is that I will take the responsibility. This is actually having the sense of responsibility that, you know, I alone will liberate all sentient beings. So just to give you an idea of the benefits of compassion, of course we know that compassion is the root of Mahayana, and then all that thing we have discussed earlier. Even when you have compassion, how you interact with other people is completely different. Even in one family, if you have compassion, the environment or the ambience is completely different. There is no hostility. Everybody will be so relaxed and calm. But whereas if you have somebody who is angry all the time, the minute the person enters, everything goes quiet. Remember some family, it's like, children, they're having fun. And then the father or whoever that enters, quiet. Whereas if you have compassion instead of anger and all that, the house, the family will be so happy. Even your relationship, you know, spousal relationship, your husband-wife relationship, compassion is the only way. I mean, with that compassion, you will be able to understand each other. Because you are not oriented to yourself, you care for the other person. At the moment, why relationship difficulty, relationship problem is all about I. you know, you have not fulfilled my wish. I want this. You are not giving it to me. It is not about giving to the other person. It is about taking in. So that's the problem. That's the cause of all that relationship problems. So with compassion, it will be different. And so that's generally. But also when you are compassionate to others, it is most likely that you will receive the same kind, which is called the reciprocity. So we have a clip here to show that.
Years later.
So we got the idea, isn't it? So kindness pays. If you are kind to others, yeah, when you are in need, yeah, there will be somebody to help you. So now we are going on to the other method, training based on Shantideva's text. So this training was one time only taught to special, what do you call that? Yes, special students. It was not taught publicly. So everything is taught from mouth to mouth. There was no teaching in public, and also it was not documented or in a text form. And then, this Lama, I think it's called Chekawa, I think, he felt that it is such a waste not to share with the public. Because this practice, why it was selectively taught, is that this is really for a brave heart, not for everybody, because this is about exchanging oneself and others. So, and also there's this main practice is Tonglen, where you take upon others' suffering. So this is not possible for everybody to do. So because of that, it is taught selectively, taught to selected students. So now, yeah, we are lucky that, you know, it is now taught publicly, and then, of course, there are texts that we can rely on. So the first is to contemplating the benefits of exchanging oneself and other, oneself and other, and faults of not. So first, yeah, main practice here. So there are three kind of topics or subtopics or subheadings. So first we need to contemplate on the benefits of exchanging self with other, and then also contemplate on faults of not exchanging self with others. So this is mainly, this is also part of the actual method of training. So why we had difficulty, why we have difficulty generating compassion or bodhicitta is that we have this self-cherishing thought, which is so strongly ingrained in us. So whatever we try to do, it is all about me. Me first, I first. Everything is me and my. And so that prevents us from doing other people, for other people, helping other people. So it is always I. So because of that, we are unable to develop compassion, or compassion as well as bodhicitta. So here, when we contemplate on the faults of this self-cherishing attitude, and then when we contemplate on the benefits of other cherishing attitude, then we will be more, what do you call, driven towards really engaging in this exchanging self with others. So according to Shantideva's text, so he says that, where is my text? Jigden tunye chinye ba tigun rangde dole chungs. So in this existence, whatever suffering we are experiencing, whatever suffering is in this existence, it is all a result of self-cherishing attitude. So let's say the birth in three lower realms. Those beings who are born in lower realms is because of karma, because of engaging in negative karma, such as killing, stealing, all this. All this we engage in killing because we have this for our selfish reason. We are so attached to ourselves. And then in order to have things for us, we engage in all kinds of negative actions. And that results in all that lower realms. And then even our daily life, we can actually relate why we have arguments with other people, why we don't get along with all people. This is all because of self-cherishing. People who are not so selfish, you look at those people, get along so well with everybody, and people welcome that kind of person. And when you are all the time thinking about yourself and your welfare, you are putting everything, you know, your things or your welfare on top of everything, that's when, yeah, you started to have problems. How do we become enemies? How quarrel starts? Because our ego cannot take it. I am so great, I am flawless. How dare you say that to me? Who are you? There is always this kind of condescending. So our normal tendency of treating other people or reacting towards other people is that if the person, somebody who is superior to us, we tend to have this jealousy. And then those who are at the same level, we tend to have competition. And then those who are below us, we have this kind of belittling, you know, look down on that person, that kind of attitude. That kind of attitude gets us in trouble. And that all comes because of our this self-cherishing thought. So in Shandin Deva's text, it says, Mangdu sheda chishi gu, tuba shengi tuanjeda, chiba rangi tuanjeda, tuba shengi tuanjeda, teni kini kyabar tuanjeda. It says, no need to say so much, it says. Just look at Buddha, the difference at Buddha and ourselves. That is already self-explanatory. Buddha was not, you know, Buddha from the beginning. Buddha was one time like us, sentient beings, full of flaws, full of problems and all that. But because Buddha realized that self-cherishing is the cause of, is the root of our problems. So, and also Buddha saw that cherishing others is the source of happiness, source of enlightenment. So Buddha was able to exchange that. And that's why now Buddha is up there in the merit field. We prostrate and here we are. Look at us, our situation, still in samsara, despite how many lives we have taken. So he says that no need to talk so much, no need to explain in detail. Just look at the difference. That is enough to show the flaws of the self-cherishing thought. And then the question is, if that is the case, whether we are able to exchange self and others. So it says it is possible. Because the body itself, our body where we are so attached and we cherish so much, it is actually not ours. It is actually from our parents. But we have developed this attachment, so such a strong attachment. If one can develop to an item that is not yours at all, and something which is actually very dirty and all that, if we are really talking about, and then there is nothing, there is no such thing as, you know, we cannot. Like when you fall in love for the first time, you barely knew that person, and then there was time where you cannot even live for 5 minutes without that person. Attachment is so strong. So if we can develop that kind of strong attachment to a stranger whom you knew nothing about, then why not? It is possible. So it's saying that it is possible to do this. Of course, it is not instant, you know. It takes time. Let me go back to my chart. Here. So the main practice here is to contemplate on the faults of self-cherishing and the benefits of other cherishing. So this way you will be more willing to do the exchange. So when we say exchange, it is not, you know, physically exchanging, thinking other as you and thinking yourself as others. It is not. It is the attitude. So at the moment, our attitude that when it comes to I, it is always, you know, important, always prioritize I, But when it comes to others, yeah, we kind of show indifference. So we need to change that attitude. Instead of ignoring and neglecting others' welfare, we should do that as a priority. And instead of neglecting others' welfare, we neglect ourselves. We give more priority to others' welfare. So this is the teaching. And this will arise, as I mentioned earlier, that both training, they are actually targeting to develop this sense of endearment. So in the Sevenfold Course in Effect, you use these first three points to engender this. Whereas in this one, you are doing this, you are still generating this by using these methods. You are not contemplating on the recognition of, you know, sentient being as your mother, but you are instead using these methods. But those who follow this and that, they both are able to cultivate this sense of endearment. But those who generate reasoning on this becomes more powerful, because here you only, your sense of endearment is only because you see their kindness when they were your mother or parents. But here, not only they are kind when they were your parents or mothers, but even when they were not parents and mother, they are still kind to us. They are still, they have been still very kind to us. So this is where it comes in the interdependence. How dependent we are on others. Like here, we are able to have this class. And this, first of all, the place itself. How many people have come together to produce, to build this? And then when we think individually, like the wood, how did it come about? Somebody has to plant, if not, somebody has to cut it down, and then, you know, bring it to the mill, then cut into slabs that you desire, and then you need people to transport and all that. So many, we normally don't think about it. When we think about it, even just ordering a pizza, how many people are involved? We just call a fall in and it does it. But you don't really realize how many people. Just making the cheese, the topping, how many people are involved? How many sentient beings are involved? These cheese are from our dairy products. Animals are involved. Farmers are involved. Then those transporters are involved. So many people involved. So when we think of this dependence on others, interdependence, then yeah, we are able to generate this appreciation for others' kindness, and that kind of builds on that already have that understanding that others are kind, and then we're able to make this sense of endearment much stronger. So let me tell you about the interdependence. I saw that on one of the TV shows. So how can you imagine that a druggie, one who uses drug abuse, a drug addicted, a daughter dies, and aeroplane crashes. What are the possible links? So that was like, wow, interdependence. What happened was, there's the father, he has a daughter, she has been sober, you call say that, for a while. But somehow he met this young boy who makes meth. And somehow, yeah, she met this boy, and then together, you know, they have this, the drug. and she died from overdose. And then, yeah, of course, father was depressed. And father works at the control tower. So he couldn't get over this, and he couldn't sleep. He was drinking all this. He came to work, and then because he was so disoriented, and he didn't really pick the other flight, and he okayed a landing, and there was a collision, and people died. Of course, this is a fictional, but it is possible, you see. You can see that interdependence, how it is. Imagine Trump makes one statement, and stock market fails. Stock market falls. And something happens in the Middle East, and it looks like we have nothing to do here, you know. Whatever happening there, oil prices goes up, everything goes up. So we are intertwined in this, you know. If we don't think about it, it's like, oh, I am, you know, autonomous, I'm living on my own, independent. No. The minute something happens there, it affects here. So I think these are a good way to, you know, sit down and think through, and this will help to cultivate appreciation for others. When you are able to see others as kind beings, you are less likely to be hostile with that person, with others. Your relationship or your interaction with others will be different. So this is the whole point. Okay, we are already running out of time. And we'll stop here.
Richard, can I just ask one thing?
Sure.
These two methods, is it true that there's only, is it true that there's just one tradition that combines the two of them into a 12, into the 12 process or something?
I don't know. Okay. You can use both.
Yeah.
Which, combined.
But there's a, there's a
combination. Yeah, Lamrim teaches both. Yeah. So there is no specific tradition that only follows that. So it is up to your level of understanding. And also your, what is called, your inclination, this mental disposition, whichever you find it easier. Yeah.
Say the dedication prayer is beginning with the short mandala off the first verse on page 4 and then conclude the prayer.
Chūshī mētō dhamma dhṛṣā līṣī nīndē gyāmbādē Sāngyē shintō mētē bhūvāyē Dhokvē namdāshī chū parāshūyī Rānā mētā lākānā yātāyā mēyī Simchū rīmbōchī mācī pānāma kīgyūrūchī Kepa nyamba meba ayam, kone kondu pevara sho. Kudze rabden jen, namgara tinle chojuru geba da. Baza tembe dhume sasum, jove mese dadu ne yuro ye. Korwe shingamadzo, pendan dewa malu jungwe ne. Chere sewan tenzin jazo yi, chabe siti bado ten gyoro je. Kundu zambo deyan dejendo, teda kwege jezo talo je. Gyawa deda tamje rado. Gyawa tamje gi, mowa kala chodo ngabade. Tāyī gīvī tsāvān dīgī gyāṁ sāṁ bū chūjī rādhū mārāyī gīvī.